Just give your body and mind a moment to let go and relax. And give your mind some space just to wander about and to relax from the day. In this experience that you're having at the moment, we can say there is satyam and mithya. The satyam, or that which is real, real in the sense that it is constant existence. Is that which is constant in this experience. What we call mithya is anything that comes into being and goes out of being. Anything that has as though a temporary existence. It appears and disappears. Anything that changes is called mithya. Because it comes into being and goes out of being. Changes. It appears and disappears. Any of the sounds that you hear outside, the bell, the chimes, are mithya. Because they come and go. Be part of any cognition that comes and goes. The nama rupa, the name form. That aspect of a cognition is mithya. The satyam remains constant. Notice in your perception of the sounds outside, the voices talking, the occasional chime of the wind chimes. See if you can separate the sounds from the conscious being or the awareness, the awareful being, the consciousness. In which the sounds take place. We give existence to the chimes as the sounds occur. See if you can notice that the existence you're actually giving to the sounds, or to the voices, to the perceptions, is actually not an object. The existence itself, your being, the beingness that you experience, and can give to the sounds, is steady, is actually not objectifiable. See if you can differentiate the existence, the being, from the changing perceptions, the sound. Like the red hot iron ball, in a sense. The existence experience which is your own amness, your own being. Is given to the sounds. And then the sounds are thought to exist in their own right. I exist and the sounds exist. But the experience of existence is not something I'm perceiving. Rather, it's something that I am being. All perceptions enjoy my amness. Or the amness which is being. Conscious being. Changelessly present. To all of the fleeting perceptions. Perceptions are mithya. Because they appear and disappear, all the while enjoying my being, the conscious being. That is changeless. The changeless content. of every perception. I am this changeless content. I am the Satyam. Now that all that changes enjoys this Satyam, this conscious being. Itself Om Bhadram Karne Vishnuyama Devaha Bhadram Pashe Makshapir Yajatraha Stirairangai Istushtuvagum Sastanubihi Vyashema Devahitanyadayuhu Swastina Indra Vrittashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swastina Sarksho Arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Padatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We're in verse 7. Brahachatadivyam achintyarupam Sukshmachatad sukshmataram vibhati Sukshmachatad sukshmataram vibhati Duratsudure tarihantike cha durasidure tarihantike cha pashatsvihaiva nihitanguhayam pashatsvihaiva nihitanguhayam brahat cha tat divyam achintya rupam sukshmat cha tat sukshmataram vibhati durat sudure tad iha antike cha pashyatsu iha eva nihitam guhayam. So in this verse, the Upanishad is describing Brahman. Brahat cha, that tad brahat cha tad, that which is brahat. Brahat means limitless, infinite. So Brahman, that Brahman which is the Atma, right? That Brahman which is limitless. So brahat, limitless. I was trying to move toward an understanding of limitless in the meditation today. Limitless means there is nothing else. Right? It means one without a second. If you say that something is limitless, then where is there room for something else? That's why this understanding of these words is so important. So if you say Brahman or Atma is limitless, then that has to be all that there is. Right? So now, say if you say, take an object in the world, and you say that object is limitless. It's a qualified limitlessness. Like, for instance, we could say that space is limitless. There's no place where space is not. Right? So space is actually the closest we can get conceptually to limitless in terms of a thing being limitless. But now I have to say space is a thing in the sense that space is not air, is not water, is not fire, is not earth. So space is still, even though it's all pervasive, it's not these other elements. Right? So limitless is not really the right word for space. All pervasive is a better word. For space to be limitless, you would have to be able to say that space is air, space is fire, space is water, space is earth, space is consciousness, space is existence. Then it's limitless. See what I mean? Now, also we think of the word limitless often in terms of qualities. This creation is made, has limitless characteristics, limitless qualities. It's numerically limitless, right? But that's not saying about a thing. If you say something is numerically limitless, or countless number of these things, that's not talking about a given thing, a vastu. This is saying Brahman, the vastu, the thing itself is limitless. See what I mean? It's not that this thing has limitless number of characteristics. No, it's the thing is limitless. It's not the thing has a limitless number of, there are limitless numbers of them. It's not that. It's that Brahman itself, the Atma, yourself, the Atma, is limitless. So now, limitless, what do they mean by it? Is one without a second. If you say that, limitless, because there's no room for that one thing is limitless, there's no room for anything else. If you say that one thing is brahat, it is limitless, that means that all of this duality that we experience, all of this numerical limitlessness, this qualitative limitlessness, the spatial limitlessness, the ongoing eternality of time, all of these type of relative, all of these relative concepts of limitless have to be included in the limitlessness of Brahman. I have to be able to say that Brahman is time, Brahman is space, Brahman is air, Brahman is water, Brahman is all of this. Brahman is you. You are Brahman. You are Brahman. You are Brahman. I am Brahman. The space is Brahman. The rug is Brahman. The beetle is Brahman. Like the worm is Brahman. The animal is Brahman. All the different lokas are Brahman. There is nothing here but Brahman. So what does that say about all of this? Mithya. That's why we say this is mithya. To say that all of this, all of this duality that we experience is mithya means what? That it itself, the subject-object experience that we have here, I am the seer, you are the seen. Seer, seen. All of this duality that we experience, including that you have to include yourself in the duality. By yourself means your body, mind, sense organs. All of your thoughts, all of your moods, all of your emotions, even the I thought. All of that belongs to the creation, and all of it exists within duality. Everything about your, that you take to be yourself, this is the kind of the red hot iron ball syndrome. Every single thing that you take to be yourself, the body, the mind, the sense organs, your thoughts, your moods, or emotions, you take to be yourself. Why? Well, because you take all of this to be the conscious being. You take all of this to exist. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. Why? Because the self-experience of existence, which you know as I am, right, is given to this creation in the form of it is. Right? So all of it. And now I want you to just to include your physical body and your mind and your sense organs and recognize that everything that exists within duality, right, this is what we call mithya. Why do we have to call it mithya? Literally have to call it mithya. Because if it's not mithya, it's satyam. If it's not mithya, then it's another reality. Right? And Brahman is not brahat. We say Brahman is limitless, one without a second. There is not room for a second thing. And so what the vision of the Upanishads is that all of this is only Brahman. If I say all of this is only Brahman, then all of this duality, all of these divisions that we experience, right, including my body, it's easy for me to include all of you, but I have to include my body also. Right? All of these things that are actually perceptions, in order for all of these to be Brahman, they can't have a reality of their own. They can't have a separate reality. I have to be able to understand all of this as having only one being. That's why they use the example of the ocean. You know, the ocean with countless waves. We can say, just like the ocean, it's huge. And it has so many different parts. Countless variations of wave forms. Countless and countless waves. We could say, countless waves and countless characteristics of those waves. Big waves, tall waves, little waves, wide waves. You know, countless numbers of them. But those countless waves that make the one ocean have only one being, which is water. They have one being. There's only one thing that is actually there. So I have to be able to say that here. There is only one thing that is actually here. And that one thing is not going to be space, air, fire, water, earth, or all of the elementals or all of the people in it, because those things can all be differentiated one from the other. So I can't say, like I can't say this wave is water, right? Meaning that this wave is the whole. See what I mean? I can say the wave is water, but I can't say the wave is the whole. Or that wave is the whole, or that wave is the whole. I have to be able to say, I have to go to the truth of the wave to say that that substance is the substance of the whole. That substance is the being of the whole. Okay, so now, If that's the vision of the Upanishads, how am I going to get to that in terms of my experience here? The way it has to get to the water, right? But it has to get to the water, but it has to go farther than that. Definitely has to get to the water. But then it has to see that the water is the substance of the whole. See what I mean? The way you can get to the water. The wave meditates and gets to the water. Okay. Okay. Recognize that I'm only water. But that dehatma buddhi that the wave has, where the identification with itself is so strongly in terms of the wave, stops it from being able to recognize the satya mitya of the relationship. And so that's what I kind of want to work, that's what this verse is working on, and that's what I want to work on now in terms of your own experience, the satya mitya experience that you're having. Okay. The conscious being that you are, say just in this experience right now, there's the conscious being, the conscious existent being, and you say, I'm a conscious existent being. That's the satyam of the experience. This is not something you have to look for. It's just something which simply is. If you can say, if you're a hunkar, the I thought can come along and say, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being. Your mind is at that time, just with that simple statement, differentiating in your experience at this moment, the conscious being that you are. You don't have to go any farther. I don't want you to go any farther. I don't want you to go into some meditative experience. This is the meditative experience. This is it right here, the meditative experience. The meditative experience with eyes open. Right now, with eyes open, you are here as a conscious being. If you look this way, or this way, or this way, if I ask you to imagine a meadow, if I ask you to remember what you were doing an hour ago, no matter what you think or what you feel, the satyam is present in that vritti. The existent being, the existent conscious being, is the substrate, changeless reality in the vritti. There's nothing you can do about it. You cannot get rid of it. Your thoughts will not never touch it. Your thoughts don't change it because it's the very changeless core of every thought that you have. Sometimes I call this the me experience. You are the one changelessly present to every thought that you have. Now, that's the satyam. What is the mitya is every thought that you have. All of the nama rupa, all of the perceptions, all of the feelings, all of the thoughts that come and go, the perceptions that come and go, the emotions that come and go, the ahankara that comes and goes, all of these thoughts and feelings and perceptions and memories, all of them, they come and go in you. You are continually, changelessly present as me, as the very self. That is you are the constant for all of those experiences. Okay, so now, if I can recognize, all right, there's all of these experiences that come and go, and none of these experiences, all of them as they're there, enjoy consciousness, they enjoy being. Because I say, whatever the thought is, whatever it is, whatever the thought is, it is. It is known, it is, and it is known. Really with me? If you have an emotion, it is known. If you have a thought, it is known. If you have a perception, it is known. So I want you to be able to differentiate that fact, that every thought that you have, it takes place in being. It exists, and it takes place in consciousness. And the thoughts come and go, and come and go, and come and go, and what does it come and go ever? Is the conscious existence. And that conscious existence, which is you, which is your amness, which is your existence, which is your being, that's not something that you can look at. That's something which is its own light. It is self-evident, self-effulgent. Right? That nothing's making it shine. It is its own light. And nothing ever changes it and can never change it. And so now that is what is satyam. Not what we call satyam,
That is what is satyam. Now we say, note that this satyam, this self, this changeless self, is brahat. It is limitless. So let me explain why we say it is limitless, because I don't want you to go look for a limitless experience. There is no limitless experience. This is the limitless experience. You can't do anything to have a limitless experience. You are the limitless experience. Why are you limitless? What is this limitless experience? If I remove or ignore, you don't really have to remove it, you can just simply ignore it. If I ignore the mithya, that which is coming into being and going out of being, and just focus on the nature of the conscious existence, remove from it as defining it, anything that comes and goes. If we do that, then what shape is consciousness, is conscious being? What shape is it? It's an irrelevant question. Do you see that? Because the instant you have shape, you're in time, you're into something that comes and goes. You're into mithya immediately. And now when you think of just your own consciousness, own being, just your own presence, can you think of it in terms of a shape? You can think of your body in terms of a shape. You can think of thought modifications in terms of a shape. You can even think of the ahankaras in terms of a shape, the I notion, I. It's got a little shape to it, right? But now, your own presence, this me, your own presence, can you think of it in terms of a shape? I would say no. Does it have borders? Does it have edges? No. Does it not have edges? No. It's not that it has edges. It's not that it doesn't have edges. Irrelevant question. Because there is nothing else. There is no coming and going. There is no change. There is no objectification. And so the me experience is just simply what it is, without any other thing. There's no other thing to compete with it, or to limit it, or make it be differentiated from something else to give it a quality, or a shape, or a color. Think about this. What color is consciousness? Is it white? Is it black? Is it purple? Is it red? Is it yellow, like the sun? Inappropriate question. There is no color you can give to your consciousness. It is what it is. It is not an object in the creation. It's not a color. Right? It's not a color. It's not a shape. Are you tall? Just think, consciousness. It doesn't apply. Now, this conscious being, this me, your own presence, can you objectify it? Can you look at it? So now consciousness, the conscious being that you are, is aware of consciousness. And so there's a subject-object relationship. Can you do that? I would say no. Because the consciousness is aware of consciousness. Are there two things there? That's why we said, no, there's not two things there. So you're not conscious of consciousness as though there's a subject-object relationship. It just is self-shining. That's why we say it's non-objectifiable. The conscious being that you are is not something that you can look at as an object. And then I could say, well, here it is for all of you to say, see too. It's not. It's the same with your being. The consciousness and existence are the same thing. You can't hold it out there to look at it as an object. You simply are it, and it is its own contained experience. Not subject-object, but because it is consciousness, it lights up everything else. Because of it, everything else is known. I say like this, because of you, everything else is known. So now, in this experience that you're having at this moment, there is you. the conscious being, which we say is Brahat, is limitless. Why? Because there is nothing else that exists. Now, if I say, that means this, none of this exists. I'm saying now, there is nothing else that exists. Now, what do I really, what's another way of saying that that would be a little bit more palatable? There is nothing else in this creation that enjoys an existence separate from this. There is nothing in this creation, in this time-space creation, on a subtle level or on a physical level or on any level, that experience, that has its own being other than, that is different from or other than or separate from this conscious being, which is non-objectifiable, and which is my very being. See what I mean? This being here, which is non-objectifiable, is the being which this creation enjoys. This creation enjoys, includes, the creation includes this physical body, these sense organs, this mind, all that exists within duality. All that exists within duality enjoys this existence experience. There is no objectifiable existence experience. So now, you have to be able to see the truth of it. How to see the truth of it? In your own experience at this moment, when we were doing the, for instance, let me take us back to the meditation. When you were doing the meditation and you were listening to the sounds, and those sounds stand for all experience, actually. Any experience, the sounds come into being and go out of being. Right? Means they come into awareness, they go out of awareness. Right? They manifest, and I'm using different ways of saying it. They come into manifestation, they go out of manifestation. What if I say something like this one? They go into being, they come out of being. You know what's kind of nice about that? A sound manifests or comes into being, boom, goes out of being. You know what's kind of nice about that? Is that you can actually notice, in using those words, that they do come into being and go out of being. Being stays exactly the same. There is not the slightest wavering of being. The being experience is the constant substrate experience of all sense experience of everything that we have. The one common denominator is being. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. But we always think, like the red hot iron ball, we always think we're always superimposing this being experience onto the world. Where if you just sit quietly for a moment, what you'll see is that the being is constant. It's the constant substrate reality of all experience that you have. And so now say, if you're able to make that differentiation, just in terms of yourself as a jiva, right now just sitting here looking through your sense organs. Say if you have been able to recognize that the conscious being, in fact, is immutable. Okay? It doesn't matter what your experience, whether it's an emotion, whether it's a perception, whether it's a memory, whether it's the I thought, that conscious being is the immutable experience. Okay? There's nothing you can do about it. You can't change it. You can't throw a bag over it. There's nothing you can do to change that. Now you say, all right, I see that. And I also see that all of these experiences that I have, including my body and my mind and sense organs, they're all changing. They're all coming and going. So, this is the so, that your mind has to think this one through. You have to think it through. If an experience, any perception that you have, If that object is subject to change, if it comes into being and goes out of being, if I can destroy it, if it has a birth and a death, right? If that's its characteristics, if it has a birth and a death, then what's the reality of that object for me to say that it has a little piece of existence on, of its own? Because now, look, in your own experience, in terms of your, this conglomerate, I mean, you have at your disposal a huge conglomerate, a conglomerate that's divisible into limitless parts, and you have this conglomerate that is also multidimensional. The conglomerate is your body, which we can have this body stand for the whole creation. Here we have this body. Okay. We have, on a subtle level, the mind, with its emotions and its perceptions. Right? So we'll have that stand for the whole subtle world. It's a conglomerate. Okay? So what, if this is true for one conglomerate, we can infinitely extend to the whole creation. Now look, here's this physical body. Can you say, I'm a conscious being, or I'm a conscious being here. I'm a conscious existent being. All right. Now, does this physical body, is this physical body the conscious existent being? And you say yes. Okay. And we say, okay, what part of this physical body is the conscious existent being? Is it the leg? Or is it the head? Or is it the heart? Or is it the blood? Or is it the tissue? What part is the existent conscious being? Because there is only one existent conscious being here. I say, I am this body. And so is the eye coming out of the leg? Or is it coming out of the heart? Or is it coming out of the eye? Where does the eye reside here? Because this body is a conglomerate. So let's find the I. Let's find the I, or let's find the existent being here. Or let's find the existence here. And there's a problem. This body, like all objects in the world, is something itself infinitely divisible. Is everybody with me on that? Because I'm going to take it one more step. This body is infinitely divisible into legs and arms, and then into hearts and lungs, then into blood vessels and organs, and then into cells, and then into molecules, and it goes on and on and on and on. So if we're searching this body for me, I'm going to be in trouble, right? Because I can't find a me here. I can't find a person here. I can find a conglomerate that a person is using. But where are we going to find the person? That's the problem. Where are we going to find the conscious being? Now, number two, here I've got this conglomerate that I say is me, but then I recognize, all right, this me, it is a conglomerate. I can't find the conscious being in it. But I can't find the conscious being in it, but I am the conscious being that is present to it. There's no question about that, right? Because I have to say, in this experience, I am. Right? In this experience, I am. I exist, and I am a conscious being. So I'm trying to locate it. Where are you going to locate it? Right? Is it locatable? So that's why in Vedanta we go through, okay, what are we going to do in terms of singling out this conscious being that I am? What are we going to do to single it out? To locate it? Well, there's, in this experience, there's one thing I can do, is I can say, well, first of all, I'm going to kind of take you in a little round circle here. First of all, I can't be the conscious me, this self, that I take myself to be, this body now. I have to be able to say, I, the conscious being, can't be what I'm looking at. We've done this hundreds of times, but I want to put it in the context here. I can't be what I'm looking at. If I can have a subject-object relationship with something, if I can differentiate myself from something, and that something can come and go in my experience, that's not going to be where consciousness resides. Where the me resides. Okay, so hold that for a minute. Think like this. If I am a conscious being, I am the subject here, and I want to find out, who am I? I am going to be the one who remains under all circumstances. I can't get rid of something and then say, I'm that thing that I got rid of. I can't remove from myself an experience and then say, I'm that experience that no longer is. Right? So I have to be the one that in all cases remains. Right? If I've destroyed myself, then I'm not going to know about that because I'm gone. You see that? Say if I get up and walk out of the room, then I'm not having this experience anymore. Or if my consciousness is destroyed, then that's happened, but this experiment is over. See what I mean? So you cannot, as long as we're trying to find out who is the conscious being, it's going to be the one that's left standing. Okay? So, whatever is dismissible is no longer left standing. So if I can objectify something so that there's a subject-object relationship and then turn my back on that, then that experience that I've gotten rid of, I'm talking about even a cognition. If I can get rid of the cognition, all right, here's this body, but what about when I'm daydreaming? The body's not there. What about when I dream? The body is not there. What about when I deep sleep? This physical creation is not there. The knower is not there. The seer is not there. If I can get rid of, whatever I can get rid of is not essential to me. It's an adjunct. It's an upadhi. It's not essential. And so now, in this experience, say in this waking state, in this experience, what I can get rid of, what I can turn my back on, that is not essential. Now, the fact is that everything that I can get rid of and I can turn my back on is something that belongs within the large conglomerate of this creation. And within the large conglomerate of this creation is this small conglomerate, this physical body which is known to me through my sense organs, which itself comes into being and goes out of being. It has a birth, it has a death. While it is here, it enjoys existence. My thoughts come into being, go out of being. While they are here, they enjoy existence. Every experience I have like that, the longer experiences, like I can say I was born and I've lived 60 years and I'll go on for so many more. Right? But this whole series of experiences, it had a beginning, it's moved through time, it has an end. Right? And I also experience it that way. I experience that this is the adult, was the young adult, was the teenager, was the child, and then was a baby, and then came in, was given birth. Right? So this whole series of experiences that I have, body, mind, sense organs, are all part of this large conglomerate. This itself is a conglomerate, and every part of it is bound by change, and as the things change, they come and go in time, they exist. As they come and go, right? They come into being, they go out of being. They come into being, they go out of being. They come into being and go out of being. I'm always here. Who am I? I'm the being. I am the being that is always here. Now, this conglomerate comes into being, comes into being, comes into being, comes into being, no problem, because I am the being. I am the being. So for me, there's no change. That's the experience I have of this conglomerate. The mind comes into being, thought, 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 emotion, 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 emotion. All of them are. I can say I am all of them. Right? But they come and go. Who doesn't come and go? I am. Me, the being. No change at all. Okay, so now, go out from this conglomerate, out into the space, space, air, fire, water, earth, to all of you. Come into being, come into being, come into being. Now you're looking at your own upadis. Does it come into own body? Does it come into being and change, 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 change? Do you remain constant? Yes. If you remain constant, can you be the one who's changing? No. Because the one who's changing is gone, dead. Every moment is dead. Okay, so every conscious being now, every conscious being in this creation is going through the same thing. All these mumukshus. We get all the mumukshus in the world and we're asking them all to have this experience. To notice this. Okay, because the other ones don't care. Okay. So now, what are they all noticing? Everyone. Every one of us. Just in this room, we're all noticing, yeah. Everything about my experience comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, comes and goes, comes into being, goes out of being, comes into being, goes out of being. Do I? No. I am the constant. So now we look. All right, all of us have that experience that there is just a constant me, a constant changeless me. That's my experience, that's your experience, that's yours experience, that's your experience. Now we go out, well, yeah, but doesn't this world have some reality? What reality? What is the reality of this world? What is this world? First of all, what is this world? It's a conglomerate, okay? It's a conglomerate of infinite number of forms. Say we have one infinite massive form, which itself, right? One infinite massive form, which itself is made of infinite massive forms, right? It's one form made of smaller forms, made of smaller forms, made of smaller forms, made of smaller forms, conglomerate within conglomerate within conglomerate within conglomerate. All being born and dying, born and die, born and die, every single aspect of it, on every level, every part of it. Born and die, born and die, born and die, born and die. Continual change, there's nothing free of that. Except for the being in which all of that is occurring. And because the being in which all of that is occurring is all changeless, it's absolutely changeless, me, changeless consciousness, all of this change is fine. Because all of the change is taking place in changelessness, in changeless being. So it all makes sense. It all hangs together. Because there's one changeless self that is the truth of the whole thing. Now that is true for me and this conglomerate in my mind and body and sense organs, that changeless being that is non-objectifiable. It's true for you, it's true for you, it's true for you, it's true for all sentient beings. But it's true for the entire creation. Because where do you draw the line and say that that isn't true? Where do you draw the line in this creation and say, well, that's true for me, and that's true for you, and that's true for you, but there's something in this creation that's not a conglomerate, an infinitely divisible conglomerate, and that thing must have some existence. How are you going to give it existence? If the thing comes into being and goes out of being and is infinitely divisible, or it has non-existence on either side, and it itself is infinitely divisible conglomerate, how can it, where's the being? Where is the thing? Where is the thing? You can't find a thing for in the first place because it's infinitely divisible. And on either end of it, there's non-existence. So where's the substance here? And you can't say there's no substance here. Because there is only substance here. That's satya mitya. You can't say there's no being here because there's only being here. That's why we say brahat. That's exactly what we mean by brahat, Brahman. When we say everything is Brahman, it's because there is nothing here but being. Now, yeah, but I don't see being. I want to see the being. You are the being. You don't see the being with your eyes. With your eyes, you see name and form. You see name and form. But the name and form is not separate from being. Can you say that there's anything that you're experiencing right now that is not enjoying existence? You say, no, everything enjoys existence. But now what you have to practice, almost like a meditation, is the existence that you're giving it an object? The forms are objects. The existence that you're giving the forms is your own amness. And so that's the differentiation that you have to make. That the amness is the isness. The amness that the creation enjoys is the isness. The isness that the creation enjoys is not an object. It's your very amness. It's your very being. So meditation, doing these meditative exercises is very helpful for that. Like just to sit, and even if you sit with your imagination, imagine a meadow, or sit and listen to objective sounds, or the objective perception of your body, right? Or the just to perceive the thought flow that takes place. See if you can differentiate the being from the perceptions. If you slow things down, it becomes very obvious. The being is constant. The perceptions are changing. Now look right now as you're looking through your sense organs at this room. Right? Just think me. Let your mind bring into the foreground just your own being. You just let your mind bring into the foreground your own being. And notice that your own being, this me, your own sense of self, as you bring it into the foreground, means that your mind is now paying attention. That's all that means. Your mind is just paying attention. Your being, this me, is not contained. It's not contained in your body. Can you see that? Just relax and see. Your own sense of me that you take to be most personally you, it's not contained in your body. It's not contained in your body. It's an irrelevant question. Just let yourself relax and kind of experience this whole room. And see, is your presence, is your own presence, it's me, is it contained anywhere? If you think it is, then let your mind just kind of expand and fill the room. Imagine yourself filling the room. And just see, is your own presence contained anywhere? So that's something to walk around playing with. So this brahat is divyam, consciousness. It's not an object in the world. It is divyam, it's consciousness. It's achintya rupam. It's not an object in the world, so you can't think of it. You can't conceptualize it as here is some existence, here is some consciousness, here is something limitless. Because all of these words, all of the words that we have, the immediate meaning of those words, are only meant to capture objects in the world, to capture relationships in the world, to capture actions in the world, to capture substances in the world. The Atma, the self, is not an object in the world. It's not a relationship. It's not an activity. All of these things, it's not a species. It's not one among other things. It's the constant presence that's pervasive to all things. So, achintya rupam. It is sukshmat tet sukshmataram. It is subtler than the subtlest. Because there's nothing that's, we say in the world, space is the most subtle. In the world, the most subtle, subtler than the subtlest is space, is akasha. Because space pervades everything. Right? And so it's the most subtle of the elements. Consciousness pervades space. Right? Awareness itself, awareness existence, awareness or awareful being, is the very being of space. Awareness illumines space. So awareness is more subtle even than space. There's nothing that is not... awareness is at the bottom of everything. It is the actual cause and substance of everything. If you get to the most subtle object in the creation, the substance of that is Atma. So the self is subtler than the subtlest. It is Vibhati. Means, just like water appears in many different forms in the ocean, consciousness with Maya, we'll get into more of this next week, our last class. Consciousness, Vibhati, consciousness manifests in all of these forms. Why do we say that? Vibhati means it manifests variously. We say that because there's nothing here but consciousness. If I were to say that you are something and you are something and you are something and you are something other than consciousness, we wouldn't use this word Vibhati. So we say consciousness manifests as all of this, but without going through any kind of change. That's why we bring in Maya. But accepting this creation as being here, which we do, because here we are talking, it has an objective reality. But if we say, what is really here? It's consciousness. Consciousness, which is existence. And so therefore we say, consciousness manifests, Vibhati, in all of these variety of ways. Right? There's nothing here but consciousness. But then we experience all of this. You take the clay pot, you say, here's a pot. There's nothing here but clay. Take the ocean. Here's the ocean with all of its millions of waves. There's nothing here but water. Here's this incredible creation that manifests, infinite manifestation of knowledge. Right? This infinite manifestation of knowledge. There's nothing here but consciousness. That is Brahman. There's nothing here but Brahman. So that's the Vibhati. Says, this Brahman is farther than the farthest. The farthest thing imaginable in this creation, Brahman is farther than that. Especially for the Avidvan. For the person who is searching for Brahman in the creation, you will never find it. As far as you go, Brahman is farther than that. But for the jnani, it is the most near. It is here. Iha. It is here. The most near, says. It is farther than the farthest, and yet it is here. Antike. It is the most near. Because it is your Atma. It is here in this body. It is your very Atma. You'll never find it out here. But it is the most near. It's Iha. Here. Antike. Inside, near, in me. Then he says, Pashyatsu, present participle, in all of the living beings, in all of the jivas, right? He says, here alone, nihitam guhayam. It is to be found here alone, in the buddhi, placed in the buddhi. It is here. Among for all these sentient beings, this is where you have to find it. It's placed here in your buddhi. Right? Because it's your buddhi. It's the conscious, it's the intellect, it's the mind. It's this mind, your intellect. That is the one that can know it. Right? It's the one that can know it. That which is infinite, that which is limitless, that which is changeless, that which is pure consciousness, that one is residing here. It can be recognized by the buddhi, right? Because the buddhi is the one that says, I am the conscious being. So that means this buddhi has this capacity to differentiate and to gain this knowledge. To gain what knowledge? That this conscious being that is abiding here in the buddhi is brahat, is limitless. Limitless means one without a second, means all. This conscious being that is abiding here in the buddhi of all sentient beings, it is this conscious being that is limitless. The limitless consciousness, which is the truth of all of this. So that is the Brahman that needs to be discovered. Now in this next verse, they give the pramana. the teaching methodology. So we'll do a little bit more on this verse next week and then go into this pramana. We'll stop here.
Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamudachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.